Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
On this episode of RealityCast, Nancy Keenan will be on to describe a new effort from a broad coalition of liberal and feminist groups to protect women's health care. The Arizona Republican debate devolves into white guys debating how slutty women on the pill are, and some coverage of how the sex talk on the right just gets weirder by the minute. Conservatives continue to fight on the contraception front, which means that comedians are having the time of their lives. Really, conservatives, you don't want this. You are officially the national laughingstock. The latest comic missive is from Funny or Die.
Women's reproductive health is an important issue,
and it's crucial that we have a serious conversation about it.
Contraception, birth control, Planned Parenthood.
We need to speak out about these important concerns.
You might say, wait, there's something about all of you that seems very similar to one another.
You're right, there is. We're all experts on women's reproductive health.
What qualifies me to be an expert on women's reproductive health? I'm a 59-year-old man.
And late middle-aged men know the most about everything.
Obviously, our opinions on what non-men do with their bodies are very important and valid.
Watch the whole thing, if only to hear the line about why God gave women tummy pockets. As expected, the continuing furor over women's right to equal access to contraception regardless of whether or not they work for a misogynist god bag got elevated to the Republican primary in the pre-primary debate in Arizona. Contraception was supposedly non-controversial in mainstream conservatism up until about 2011, when all of a sudden it became such a terrible thing that Republicans threatened to shut down the federal government in order not to subsidize it. Even a few months ago, Mitt Romney, who didn't seem to get the memo, was claiming that he supported access to contraception. But as those watching the debate saw, expressing even bland support for contraception, something 99% of American women use, has become politically toxic for Republicans trying to win over a conservative base.
Since birth control is the latest hot topic, which candidate believes in birth control, and if not, why? As you can see, it's a very popular question.
It's a very popular question in the audience, as we can see.
The booing mainly seems to be a reflection of how imperious the right has gotten. They feel entitled to dismantle and block women's access to contraception without ever being asked about it, much less held accountable. But it fits in with other things we know about conservatives, especially how they feel entitled to say and do blatantly racist and sexist things, but then get the vapors if you point out that they're blatantly sexist and racist. The basic theme of the next 10 minutes was that almost no candidate was willing to go on the record in support of the 99% of American women that use contraception. Gingrich kicked off the "let's not actually answer the question" strategy.
But I just want to point out, you did not once in the 2008 campaign, not once did anybody in the elite media ask why Barack Obama voted in favor of legalizing infanticide.
The reason no one asked that is for the same reason that no one asked why Barack Obama sneezes and gold comes out. Because it didn't happen. And if you believe that it did, it says way more about your basic grip on reality than it says about Obama. Obama opposed a bill that would require doctors to play act, trying to revive dead fetuses that have been extracted from pregnant women. That there's a widespread belief that Obama's unwillingness to torture already traumatized women is the same thing as infanticide, and it's just, well, it's alarming how the entire crowd at this debate appears to live in a fantasy world. Unfortunately, John King didn't correct the record. Mitt Romney sensed the room's desire to hear lies presented in the most hysterical fashion possible and happily obliged.
Call back in the debate that we had, George Stephanopoulos talking all about birth control. We wonder why in the world and contraception, and it's like, why is he going there? Well, we found out when Barack Obama continued his attack on religious conscience. I don't think we've seen in the history of this country the kind of attack on religious conscience, religious freedom, religious tolerance that we've seen under Barack Obama. Most recently, of course, Most recently requiring the Catholic Church to provide for its employees and its various enterprises health care insurance that would include birth control, sterilization, and the morning after pill. Unbelievable.
Fact check. The church was never required to provide contraception. Catholic institutions like hospitals and universities aren't either. The women are getting the contraception through a third party that is stepping up to ensure their rights. So Mitt Romney is arguing that not allowing employers to impose what is functionally a fine on women for being female is the greatest attack on religious liberty in the history of this country. That would mean it's greater than the attacks that forced his own family to flee the country because of religious persecution. Greater than when Catholics were banned from going to public schools. Greater than when non-Christians were forced to recite Christian prayers in school. Greater than creationists trying to shove their religious dogma on kids in the science classroom. Allowing women to get contraception for free from a third party and not letting their employer prevent them from doing so is greater than all of that. Okay. Actually, since conservatives are functionally demanding the right to pay women less because they have sex by stripping benefits, the only people whose liberty is being threatened are women. Rick Santorum didn't dodge the issue. No, he went straight for the sex is the greatest evil known to mankind argument.
Which is the increasing number of children being born out of wedlock in America, teens who are sexually active. What we're seeing is a problem in our culture with respect to children being raised by children being raised out of wedlock, and the impact on society economically, the impact on society with respect to drug use and all a host of other things when children have children. And so, yes, I was talking about these very serious issues. And in fact, as I mentioned before, 2 days ago on the front page of the New York Times, they're talking about the same thing. The bottom line is that we have a problem in this country, and the family is fracturing. Over 40% of children born in America are born out of wedlock. How can a country survive if children are being raised in homes where it's so much harder to succeed economically?
This confused a lot of people who aren't familiar with the strange conspiracy theories of the right. After all, Santorum said he's against contraception because of something that contraception prevents, which is unintended pregnancy. This is because the confused people were thinking with real-world logic. As I covered last week, the theory on the right basically goes like this. People didn't really have sex before contraception unless they were grimly getting it over with to make a baby. Then the pill was invented, and all of a sudden people got the crazy idea that sex was fun. So they go and have sex, which they totally never did before the pill, and sometimes they get pregnant. This also requires believing contraception doesn't work, despite the mounds of evidence that it does. The whole theory hinges on the belief that sex wasn't desirable prior to contraception. The prevailing evidence, however, says that it was. For instance, while Santorum is claiming here that teenage pregnancy is at a high, in fact, it's at historically low levels. The main reason is contraception. In fact, in the 1950s, aka the era before people thought sex was fun, the teenage pregnancy rate was twice what it is now. Ron Paul used to be an OBGYN, so he wasn't willing to pretend that the pill created sex. But his opinion wasn't much nicer. After he argued that there should be no such thing as public schools, he said,
Sort of along the line of the pills creating the immorality, I don't see it that way. I think the immorality creates the problem of wanting to use the pills, so you don't blame the pills.
So while he was the only candidate willing to even sound mildly supportive of contraception, he did argue that 99% of American women are immoral because they want to have sex without wanting to get pregnant every time. Remember, folks, this is 2012.
I'd like to welcome Nancy Keenan to the program. Nancy is the president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, and she's here today to talk about a new project that NARAL is working on alongside over 50 organizations, including Planned Parenthood, ACOG, SEIU, and Sister Song. It's called the Coalition to Protect Women's Healthcare. Welcome to RealityCast, Nancy.
Thanks, Amanda. I really enjoyed the invite.
So what inspired this broad range of groups to get together to defend women's health care?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we, you know, back in 2011, we predicted that we were going to see all of these attacks. And I think that we have evidence now that they are overreaching and they're so out of touch. So as Americans are galvanized and are very energized by these attacks on women, we felt that a coalition, there's now 50 member groups in it, and it's growing. And it is a place where we can work together, coordinate, collaborate, and I think it's more powerful than always just working separately.
And this has really kind of taken off because of the dispute over the Health and Human Services regulation requiring employers to cover contraception through employee health insurance at no cost, correct?
Yeah, it was one of the, when the president put that out, that all women would have contraceptive coverage without a copay, of course the fight was on. And now it will continue, and it's going to continue probably through the fall. With the Blunt Amendment, which is the hearing's going to be tomorrow, it basically goes far beyond churches and social services not requiring contraceptive coverage, but it basically says any boss, any employer can have their view on morality trump women's view. And so this is it's going to be a long fight. And as long as they are focused on taking away contraceptive coverage, we're going to focus on what's at risk for women in this country.
I think a lot of people who aren't necessarily, you know, in the pro-choice movement and haven't seen these attacks on contraception coming for a long time, I think like we have, are completely startled. Contraception doesn't seem very controversial to most Americans, but it obviously is. How long has this been brewing on the right?
You know, it's been brewing a long time. And again, I think that it probably really escalated when we saw the healthcare debate take off and, you know, what was going to be covered in healthcare for women and what was not. So it's been going on for a long time here. And I think the other side has not only been focused on outlawing abortion care in this country, but truly denying women all their reproductive decisions that they make. And so, not surprising to us, but again, here at NARAL, we have been fighting this battle long and hard, including when they wanted to push the whole issue around abstinence-only sex education. So their agenda is long and wide, and again, we're going to make sure that people understand what effect this has on women's lives.
So, besides the attempts to carve out huge exceptions to the Health and Human Services regulations, what are some other ways that women's access to contraception is being threatened right now?
Yeah. Well, I think it's not only access to contraception that we see here at the federal level under the Blunt Amendment and the Fortenberry, which we're going to be dealing with here this week and in weeks to come, as I said. But look, we have seen everything from what happened in Virginia with mandatory ultrasounds, and we're seeing that pattern across at state legislative levels. We are seeing everything from, we actually saw twice as many anti-choice measures in 2011 than we did in years before. There were 8 votes in the United States Congress this last time. That might not seem like many, but, you know, back in 2008, there were none. There were no anti-choice legislation. So these guys are moving fast and furiously. And again, whether it's NARAL Pro-Choice America, whether it's the coalition working together, we are trying to raise the awareness of what this will mean for women's lives every single day.
So Roy Blunt behind the Blunt Amendment and Daryl Issa, who held the congressional hearings that had a mostly male panel and all male in the morning, they are claiming that this doesn't have anything to do with contraception and is just an issue of religious freedom. What's your response to that claim?
Well, they're absolutely wrong. I mean, the president's decision basically made it very clear that that the church itself, they would not have to cover this contraception. They really are, especially when you see the Blunt Amendment. This would be and allow any boss, anybody's boss, basically saying, if I don't think it's morally correct to cover your birth control, I don't have to do that. And it is mind-boggling in 2012 that we are talking about contraceptive coverage. I feel like we've been catapulted back to the 1940s or before. These folks, again, are so out of touch when you have 99% of women accessing birth control at some point in their life, 98% of Catholic women. They are just totally out of touch, and I think it's going to translate in the long term in the elections when women are going to have their voices heard on this issue of how they're trying to deny contraceptive coverage.
Which I've been trying to point out repeatedly on this show, women, it's not the employer's contraception coverage, it's the employee's, because they worked for it, they earned it, it's part of their compensation.
That's correct. And the fact is that it is basic health care. And what they're trying to do here is define very specifically what they believe should be basic health care. And in the case of women, I mean, any young woman in this country knows what it costs to walk into a pharmacy and what a difference it'll make in her life when she walks up to that pharmacist and is able to access her birth control without a copay. It is an economic issue. It's a health issue. And these folks up on Capitol Hill are trying to deny women that access.
So I think we've been discussing the sort of legal issues of this, but I also want to kind of talk about what contraception means for women. If women in this country had improved access to contraception and every woman who wanted it could get it without any expensive hassles, what do you think the effects would be on our society?
Well, enormous effects. First, it would reduce unintended pregnancies in this country. And I think that in itself, that women, when they have access to contraception and don't have to worry about a copay, the numbers of unintended pregnancies would be reduced. And women can again have making the decisions about when they're planning their family. And then also part of that, when you can reduce unintended pregnancies in this country, you can reduce the need for abortion while keeping it safe and legal. And I think that most women there again would say that is good sense. Abortion has to be legal in this country, has to be accessible for women, and again, the decision should be made with her and her doctor and her family, and it should not be in the hands of politicians, whether they're sitting here in Washington or any state capital across the country.
What are some of the actions the coalition is taking to protect women's health care and access to abortion and contraception?
Right. There's a lot of things. Obviously, we have a website that has a petition of support where visitors are asked to supply the email, but we're doing that social media with Twitter and Facebook, those digital ads. And we've been targeting certain female folks, voters in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, again, because people have to understand this personal is political. Obviously, we're reaching out to the millions of women on social media, and that has got to build, because when those voices are heard together, when it's a symphony of voices, it has a much larger impact than the individual women overall. You know, every voice counts. Every voice counts. And so we are trying to get women to understand the issue here, talk about the issue, and make sure their voices are heard.
My guest today has been Nancy Keenan. You can find out more and how to help the Coalition to Protect Women's Healthcare by going to coalitiontoprotectwomenshealthcare.org. You can sign that petition and take other action there. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Nancy.
Amanda, thanks for the invite. Really enjoyed it, and keep up the good work on your end.
The right-wing freakout over the ladies and the havings of the sexes continues, and this expression of the conservative id gets more disturbing by the second. At first, the rhetoric coming out of the right caused decent people to wonder if they know that they sound like they don't understand the first thing about sex. Then it caused us to wonder if they, in fact, do know the first thing about sex. Now it's phase three, removing all doubt and replacing it with certainty that anti-choicers really don't have the first clue of what sex is like for everyday Americans. Take, for instance, Virginia Delegate David Albo, who supports pre-abortion mandated shaming and humiliation rituals such as mandatory ultrasounds to make sure that sexually active women know that legislators like him think they're dirty sluts. Albo doesn't like women have sex, but he himself does like it. And so he told a story in front of the whole legislature about how he tried to have sex with his wife. It was like hearing a seventh grader try to describe what he imagines married sex to be like, with him getting out the wine and putting his arm around her shoulders like it was a first date. And then this.
And all of a sudden, on my big screen TV comes this big thing and a picture of a bill that has Albo on it. I went, wow, holy smokes, is my name as big as a wall. And the very next scene was a gentleman from Alexandria's face, as big as my wall, going, trans V, and just trans V this and trans V that, and they hate women, and we're gonna, and that bill, she killed a bill because she didn't go far enough, she's crazy, and just goes on and on and on. And I'm like this with my wife, and the show's over, and she looks at me and she goes, I gotta go to bed.
So, Albo thinks that women who have sex and don't want to have a baby are so dirty, they should be forced to endure unwanted vaginal probing as punishment. And Albo, despite thinking sex is dirty, wants to have it with his wife, presumably by touching her vagina. But despite all this obsessive interest in using vaginas both to punish women and as pleasure devices for himself, he can't actually say the word vagina. Ugh. By the way, the point of this story was that his opponents should let him shame women for being sexual without criticism, because if they criticize him, his wife might find out that he doesn't think well of women who have sex, and then she won't have sex with him. Personally, I think it would be just great if every man who thinks women are dirty for having sex never saw another woman naked again. By the way, if you've been listening to this show, you know that I find the way anti-choice men talk about contraception really strange. Like, they think it's only something porn actresses and women on Sex and the City use, and certainly not their good, wholesome wives. It seems just a little implausible that they know so little about the way this works. But what Albo said next is just more evidence for the theory that they really don't know.
So if the gentleman's plan was to make sure there was one less Republican in this world, he did it. So I expect an apology from you later.
An apology because he, as a man, is entitled to sex. Unlike those women whose vaginas should be forcibly probed because they had sex without his express permission. We don't see sex as a very occasional thing that happens if and only if we're ready to produce a child. Most people have sex a couple of times a week. Should people who have such unrealistic and strange ideas about sex really be making rules about how the rest of us go about it? Equally strange was the complete meltdown on the right over the idea that contraception, which 99% of women use but many struggle to afford, is going to now be fully covered by insurance. The way they carried on about it, you would literally think that the HHS mandated that insurance cover polar bear cub clubbing. Except that most of these people think clubbing a baby polar bear is less evil than having sex for pleasure.
I have a message that you released on this mandate. I want to ask you a couple questions from it. You, in this message, you said the devil wants to silence the church's voice. Is this mandate a part of that, of just saying, look, if you compromise on this, we know we can get you on something bigger down the road?
I think you're exactly right. You know, the power of evil is going to try any way that it can to get a hook into our world and the values that we hold as so dear and so important as believing people. And the power of evil, the devil, can certainly look as looking all, everywhere to find places where they can the power of evil can make a difference.
That was Walter Nicholas, a bishop from South Dakota, on Tony Perkins' show. And yes, he is basically saying that women using contraception is evil and the devil. Remember, that's 99% of American women he's now accusing of basically being the devil. Vaginas radiate Satan rays, you know. But of course, the entire problem with the hysterical breakdown over contraception is it blows the anti-choice cover. Their claim has always been that this isn't about sex or women, but about believing life begins at conception. But now they're completely losing it over the thought that women can easily afford preventing that conception, and therefore avoiding abortion. So, what to do? Well, David Barton, after a long and tedious monologue claiming that any science that religious nuts don't like can be considered false science, played footsie with a way to shoehorn their opposition to preventing conception with their claims about abortion.
If you consider that life begins at conception, and I have to consider that biblically, I think life begins before conception, because it says, before you were in your mother's womb, I knew you. So I got to say, well, it at least begins at conception. You know, how you handle that Jeremiah verse that says, before that I knew you, you know, that's an interesting question.
You heard right. He believes life begins before conception. It had to happen. Once they came out believing that not only do women not have a right to say no to a pregnancy that's already started, but also that women don't have a right to say no to pregnancy at all, this rationale was going to come out. It'll be interesting to see how it evolves. I don't think the public at large is going to buy the "it's science because my God says so" argument. And now for the Wisdom of Wingnuts, Attack the Sexually Active Lady Edition. Georgetown student Sandra Fluke testified in Congress about the importance of contraception coverage for college-age women. Since she admitted using contraception in public, the right-wing response has been to act like they've never heard of a woman having sex before.
What does it say about the college co-ed Susan Fluke, who goes before a congressional committee and essentially says that she must be paid to have sex? What does that make her? It makes her a slut, right? Makes her a prostitute. She wants to be paid to have sex. She's having so much sex she can't afford the contraception. She wants you and me and the taxpayers to pay her to have sex. What does that make us? We're the pimps.
I repeat, 99% of American women have used contraception. Most of us already have our contraception paid for in part by insurance. These regulations just change how much of it. So Rush Limbaugh just called pretty much every woman in America a prostitute.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.